Hello, everyone. Welcome to We're Only Human. I am Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'm so glad to be here today. Last week, I attended this year's IBM Think Conference in San Francisco. Really, really interesting event. I spent some quality time with my good friend and colleague, Madeline Lorano, over at Aptitude Research. We actually set aside some time to record this show together. So if you catch any background noise, we were recording in a very unique place, but it seemed to work out pretty well. In the show, we talk about some of the great sessions we saw on the HR track, as well as some ideas for how to get HR and business leaders on the same page. Good discussion there. We also get into some interesting new research findings that Madeline's working on around quality of hire. I actually wrote a blog post from the event covering some of the content, and I'll make sure to link that in the show notes in case you want to see my coverage, check out what was there. In addition to what you hear on the show, IBM made some big announcements last week on the talent front. One of those is still under legal review, so I can't share it just yet. Keep your eyes peeled. But the other announcement is a new partnership with Skillsoft. If you recall, I actually spoke with Skillsoft Chief Content Officer Mark Onisk in episode 45. We talked about building a culture of learning. I'll make sure to link that one because it was a really interesting discussion. This new partnership enables customers to get the best of Watson Talent Frameworks as well as the award-winning Skillsoft content that they bring to the table. One of the quotes from the leaders at IBM said that employees will have at their fingertips a way to not only identify their own competencies, but the skills and capabilities their organization needs. That means that they can create their own personalized learning plan and their career development plan that matches up not just their aspirations, but actually what their organization needs from them. So it's a way to give them a way to feel like they're in the loop on what the company is needing and doing. And that's a huge piece. I'm finishing actually a big piece of research with ATD right now on how to reskill and upskill employees. And that was one of the key things that popped out there, that we have to make sure that if we can't identify what those skills are and help share that with employees, they can't get on board. So it's a key part of that. I'll make sure to have a link in the show notes to both the episode with Mark Onisk and the announcement from IBM so you can check both of those out and see what's going on there. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hey everyone, this is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human, and I'm recording live here from not so beautiful San Francisco actually today. It's not so pleasant, but we're actually here at a really interesting event, hanging out at IBM Think, and I'm here with my good friend, colleague, fellow analyst, Bostonian, can't think of enough nice things to say about her, Madeline Lorano.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having me here.
Absolutely, yes. It's always a good experience getting to spend some time with you, right?
Same here. We've
been talking all day. I'm like, goodness, why don't we record some of this so everybody else can hear the good stuff we're chatting about. So as I mentioned, we're here at IBM Think. This morning, we actually spent our time at the HR Exchange, hearing from some of the speakers, both inside IBM and outside, some of their customers, talking about the things that are going on, some of the interesting trends and so on. So I actually wanted to, because I have a chance to ask someone smarter than me some questions.
Oh, please.
I got a chance to ask you a couple questions. I'd love to give you like three of the quotes that I pulled from this morning that were interesting to me. Love to get your insight on those, your take on it. We'll bat it back and forth a little bit, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it a little bit, okay?
That sounds great.
Awesome. So the first one up is business leaders know the business, but it's on HR and talent leaders to help them know the people, right? They've got to understand the skills that we have available. They've got to understand the challenges we have on the people front. And if HR and the talent team isn't doing a good job sharing those things, not doing a good job sharing that full picture, the business leaders can't make the right decisions at the right time. Right? They're making a decision with incomplete data, pretty much. I'd love to get your take on that. And yeah, go for it.
I think that's very true, and it's a theme that came across today for sure. I mean, I think when you think about everything happening at IBM right now, AI, we're talking about blockchain here, we're talking about automation, they're big themes and they tend to get a lot of attention, but the basis and the core of what IBM has been known for is its services.
Yeah.
And that really came through today. You know, Mark Foster talked to us on the services side about how all of this change in technology really doesn't take away from the fact that it's really about people and it's really about talent. And that's been, you know, I think a big theme, and I think it's exactly to your point. Business leaders need the information and the data on people to be able to make those decisions.
Excellent. So the next one, there's going to be a theme here, actually, in these three questions, I realized, as we're going through.
Oh, good. I like themes.
So the next, so that was, that comment, that part of the conversation was from a conversation with United Health Group. There was actually a panel of HR leaders, and so United Health Group was sharing that piece I just mentioned. The second panelist was from AECOM. She was their chief HR officer, and she talked about the importance of co-creation from the perspective of a talent leader. Actually, you're the head of talent at an organization. You can't come at problems saying, okay, we'll just, you know, this will be our next HR initiative or next HR project and hope to succeed, because the business needs to be co-creating that and partnering with you on those things. Coach, what's your take on that?
I think it's true, and I think it's hard for organizations sometimes that don't have that opportunity to co-create with the business. There might be an appetite to do that, but they might not feel that they have those relationships and those partnerships with the business to be able to co-create. How many opportunities do you get as an HR leader or a talent leader to be able to present something to the business in a way that's felt more like a partnership?
So one of the people I really look up to in the HR space, they said that I knew that I had arrived as a leader strategically, not when people were coming to me with people problems, but when they were coming to me with business problems.
Yeah, right.
We value insight so much. Yes, you're in charge of HR. You lead the decisions there, but we have a business problem and we need your input on it because we trust you, we believe you, we think that you have the right insights to offer and the right perspective. And that's the thing that's always stuck with me, is when someone's coming to you, not just with, we've got to deal with this people issue or how are we going to hire this right person, but we've got this problem with quality.
Yeah.
How can we tie that back to people? We've got this problem with efficiency, our product, R&D, something else. How
Safety.
Can we tie that back to people? How can we connect that back to connect those dots?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a testament not only to the leader and their, you know, reputation in the organization, but it's also a testament to the interconnection between people and those business challenges, which is becoming more and more obvious, I think, to a lot of organizations.
Excellent. Love that one. And so the last one, the third one, and this doesn't have to be the last one we talk about, but this is the last one that popped up to me. Someone said, I forgot who said it this morning, but people are either the strongest or the weakest link in your organization.
Yeah.
We heard a lot about AI and stuff this morning, and goodness, that's the theme of the whole event with IBM's Watson products. But they said people are either your strongest or your weakest link, and that made me stop and think, because we talk about culture all the time. We talk about those different elements and aspects of it. But it reminded me, we talk about the value people can bring to it. I'd love to get your take on that, and then I'll probably share some other comments and things there. But one of the things that popped in my head is, I know you've done some research on quality of hire and how that ties in. I think that would be an interesting thing to kind of plug here.
Yeah, it is. I'm, you know, speaking about the quality of hire piece and just the employee experience overall, I think it's true at a lot of organizations, and it's viewed in that very black and white manner. You're either the strongest link or the weakest link at the organization, but there's a lot of factors that go into that. Does this employee have the right tools that they need, the right resources, the right support from management to be able to do the best job that they're able to do within their organization?
So the thing that occurs to me is, we talk about in the context of AI, there are things that computers, software, algorithms can do really, really well, right? You want some advanced analysis or statistics or whatever else done, hand it over. I'm not interested in doing that. However, if it comes down to how to have a conversation with someone, how to persuade someone to do something differently. Actually, there was a debate last night where IBM's Watson debater product debated against a human. It lost, but people were kind of amazed at what the debating tool was able to do. But those things that are fundamentally human, how can we make sure that we're prioritizing those? How can we make sure that we are seeking those from our people and letting the robots handle the robotic stuff anyway? Right? Every job, yours and mine included, has some piece of it that's robotic in nature.
We
just have to do that. How can we make sure that those things are offloaded to the degree we can, but we focus on those things that are core human skills so that we're leveraging the best that we have, the best that they have as well?
And showing the value to that, showing the value to the human element. This is what, you know, we want you to do as employees in our organization, and being very transparent about what might be automated or what might become something that is taken care of by AI.
Yes.
But there's that conversation piece that isn't happening at a lot of organizations.
No. Well, some of the different stats and things that I've seen, or the research I've seen around the conversation of AI broadly, is someone this morning was saying, IBM, someone this morning was saying that, hey, we did a survey, employees are excited about AI, but they're also kind of bummed that their employers aren't talking to them about how they're going to leverage it, what's going to mean for their jobs.
Right.
Like, there's the big question there, uncertainty, fear and concern in some cases.
Right.
And there's actually, I saw a report the other day that said organizations that are adopting AI tools are actually hiring more people to do some things because it's making them more efficient in areas. Mm-hmm. And that means we can actually deliver more things to more people because these things are in place. So the things that everybody assumes are going to happen with jobs aren't necessarily going to happen, and how things are going to change. I think there's so much fluctuation there, it's hard to know what's going to happen. But going back to what you were saying, it comes down to how can we make sure that people are doing the human pieces of the job so that we can get the most out of them. And honestly, that's going to make them happier too.
And reskilling them, if that needs to be the case too, to help encourage them to do those human elements. And there's a reskilling that's been a big theme of this conference. Yes. And how do we do that? And that needs to be a priority, not just thinking about what AI and automation is going to tackle, but how do we reskill? And it needs to happen at an education level. We don't talk enough about that. How do we think about changing our education model so that we are thinking about people coming out of college and even high school with skills that will be valuable in a workplace that is shared with automation and AI?
So one of the stats that I mentioned in the book, and I always gets kind of a laugh from the audience because they know it's true, is that there was a study that Gallup did a couple years ago, and they surveyed chief academic officers at educational institutions and said, how many of your students would you say get out of here, graduate, are ready to just hit the ground running in their job? Mm-hmm. And they said about 90%. When they ask the same question of business leaders, how many people graduate and come to you ready to do the job? 10%.
So
there's a huge gap there. Huge gap for changing how we educate people or even the perception of what the degree means. This doesn't mean that you graduate ready to do the job. This just means you have these fundamental knowledge. But again, in that case, you're no better than an algorithm that doesn't understand the context and everything else around that contextual awareness of what the job is and the task you do. Anyway, it's really just... I would agree with you. That's a huge question, a big problem to solve, but it does start there. Mm-hmm. But even within the workplace, we've got to be really clear with people about what reskilling, upskilling means.
Right.
We just finished a study ourselves for a bigger program to do with ATD on reskilling and upskilling. And we found that, so when we asked learning leaders about how much it would cost to reskill someone for an entirely different job, Madeline's job's going away, we're going to train you for a new job. They said, approximately $10,000 was their estimate. But when you look at the data on how much it costs to hire someone, the cost of turnover, the cost to hire someone, based on all the averages, and every job's not average, I get that, but based on the averages in the US, it costs $20,000 to hire someone. So it costs twice as much to hire them than it does to take you and reskill you for another job in their organization.
Wow.
But we always want to say, oh, you know, Madeline's not a fit anymore, thanks for your service, goodbye, let's
we'll
go hire
someone else
to be Madeline 2.0, when in reality it would have been much easier. They already know you're a fit, you know a lot of the tribal knowledge of the organization, everything else. So it's really interesting to see how some of those things are coming out there.
That fits into the quality of hire too.
I was going to say, talk about what was something from the quality of hire study you've just done that was interesting for you, something that you're like, oh, this, you know, this blew me away, I didn't expect it, or this confirms something I already knew. I'd love to hear like those key things for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think we all know that quality of hire is considered often to be the most important metric in talent acquisition now, but most companies do not have a way to measure it, and it's not standardized.
Yes.
So it's measured differently, not only at different companies, but within an organization it's measured differently. So we really looked at doing three things. First, defining quality of hire and putting together a plan for helping companies actually define what quality of hire is. And that's a combination of pre-hire and post-hire metrics. So really thinking about what makes someone a great hire at your organization, how do you define what those metrics that are included in quality of hire are? The next stage is measuring it. So there's a lot of formulas out there for measuring quality of hire where you have these different indicators and you divide them and then you measure it by, you know, overall cost or whatever it may be. But for the exercise in this report that we did, it's really identifying what we called 8 critical indicators, 4 for pre-hire, 4 for post-hire. And some of it's data that you have available that we're just not using to inform quality of hire.
Yes.
One interesting thing that we found is that hiring managers just don't have the data to make decisions. They're relying, 70% are relying just on the resume of a candidate to make a decision on a hire. Yet we're collecting data from all of these different, you know, points of contact.
Yes.
We're collecting them through the interview. We're collecting them through the background screen. We're collecting them through the candidate profile. We're collecting them in a reference check.
Yes.
So if we have a better model for looking at what these indicators are and consistently collecting interview data, reference data, screening data, candidate profile data, candidate survey data, and then on the same on the post-hire, first-year performance goals, first-year retention, first-year productivity, hiring manager satisfaction. How can we come up with a more systematic way to define and then improve it?
Gosh, I love that. I think back to the times when I was recruiting and, mm-hmm. and bringing people forth to a hiring manager, and one of the things that I would do after we closed a rec was to the hiring manager satisfaction piece. I would send an email to them that had two questions. On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy were you with this?
Yeah.
And if you could have changed anything about it, what would it have been?
Yeah.
And just trying to get a simple measure of how they felt about the process and the
5-point scale, something
the candidates
super,
we offer, yeah. like they could talk about anything.
Right.
And they could say, hey, don't wear that stupid tie again to the next interview. And
right.
Like anything.
Right.
But it could have been something more constructive, like, hey, I thought that we should have asked the questions we asked the last three candidates, we should have asked the first three candidates.
Right.
Or like anything about it, but it's about improving that process over and over and over and refining over time. Versus saying quality of hire is really hard and I'm not sure how to measure it, so let's go with time to fill
right.
or cost per hire or something else.
Or just not measure it.
Or measure nothing at all and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
We know that always works out, right?
Oh, it always works out, doesn't it?
At least the best outcome.
Just the gut feeling.
Goodness gracious.
But it's interesting too because I think from a technology standpoint, talent acquisition focuses so much today on what happens before somebody applies.
Yes.
And rightly so, there's an emphasis on creating more awareness about your organization, branding, recruitment marketing. This is all really important investments for organizations. But yet we tend to, in doing that, defocus on some of these areas later down in the funnel, like interview, like reference checking, background screening. How
onboarding.
Do we make sure onboarding? How do we make sure we make really strategic about the solutions we use there so that the data that we have is consistent and it's standardized?
Interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Again, told you I wanted to talk to someone super
we
sharp.
We can talk about this for so long, but
yes.
The report's coming out soon. I'll share it with you. And
okay. Excellent. So if someone wants that, the next
Absolutely.
Question I was going to ask you, if they want to see that stuff,
mm-hmm.
What's the website?
AptitudeResearch.com.
Okay. AptitudeResearch.com. You can go there. They can sign up on your list, I'm sure, and they'll get a notification when that comes
yep.
out probably.
And it's almost like a workbook too. So it's an exercise for your organization to figure out the standardization you want to use.
Okay. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to cost them $10 million, right?
Oh, absolutely. 11 million maybe. No, it's free. Our research
free.
Is free. So you can download the report and let us know what you think.
Okay. Excellent. Awesome. Madeline, this has been so much fun. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Ben.
It's always great to see you in person. Right, we talk on the phone a lot.
Yeah.
We chat. We're texting. Great stuff with the kids all the time. But it's good to see you in person.
Same here.
So much fun to just catch up and everything else. Anything else you'd like to say for a wrap up?
Well, I think just to put this in perspective too, it's amazing to spend time with you at an event where there's 40,000 people.
I know.
And that's what this is the biggest event that I will go to all year.
Probably
and
me too, yes.
Takes up what feels like half of San Francisco, although I know that's not true. But it's amazing to spend some time.
You've been at four hotels today, I think, right?
I think I have, yep.
Yes. So,
and I don't even remember where I'm staying. But this is, it's fun to be with you in such a massive environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome.
Thank
to everybody
you.
Else, thank you for joining us on We're on the Human today. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.